Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to Brian Lehrer's Show. I'm Kai Wright, features editor for The Nation, sitting in for Brian. If you're like me, you're watching the Olympic Games, you're trying to look past the algae blooms and the doping scandals, but you can't stop wondering, how do these people pull this off? You know, and not just the physical feats these athletes achieve, but the mental stuff. You spent your whole life preparing for this moment, and success or failure will turn on like 30 seconds of performance. What's going on in their heads? How are they doing it? Our next guest, Stan Beacham. He's a Georgia-based sports psychologist and author of the forthcoming book, Elite Minds, How Winners Think Differently to Create a Competitive Edge and Maximize Their Success. He'll give us some insight into the mental games going on along with these physical contests. Welcome to WNYC, Stan Beacham.
Thank you. It's good to be with you guys.
So I think we got to start with the big moment, the Phelps face, the snarl seen around the world. Do you think that Michael Phelps was really mad at his friend-turned-enemy, South African swimmer Chad Lacroze, or was that just a motivational tool he was using for himself? He was ginning up some anger that gets himself going.
Well, you know, it's basically speculation, but my guess would be is he wasn't trying to put on a show or draw any attention. He was just doing what he always does. I mean, if you look at these top performers, they have their own process of how they get ready to go. So, I mean, you know, Phelps is going to sit there with his headphones on, listen to music. Usain Bolt's going to dance around. And I think we in the media, we get kind of excited about that because it's another storyline. But to them, I think it's much ado about nothing.
You think he really just wasn't? He didn't even see Lacroze standing there. He was just doing his own thing, and his face happened to be funny.
Absolutely. you can't get to that level if you're going to be caught up in what someone else is doing before a big race.
Got it. You can't think about the competitor. It's all about you.
Exactly.
Listeners, is there a moment in these games that stands out to you, not only for the physical part, but the psychological barriers that athletes had to get over? Do you have questions about that? Call in, ask Dr. Stan Beacham. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So what about British long distance runner Mo Farah? So, you know, he won the 10,000 meter race after he literally fell down on the track. I can't imagine how what you go through to make yourself get up and start racing again. What does this tell us about elite athletes? Is that the kind of thing? How do you prepare for that?
Well, I think when you look at the elite athletes, they prepare themselves for a lot of situations. And so the fact that the guy fell down, again, it's not a big deal to him. I remember years ago, Bill Rogers, when he won the Boston Marathon, he stopped twice to tie his shoe. So, I mean, obviously you can't get away with that in a 100 or a 200 meter race, but in a long race, basically these marathoners, the long distance guys, there's a series of adverse things that are going to happen to you over the course of a race. And the question is, how do you respond to it? But if you talk to enough athletes, especially if you do the longer runs, they can all tell you a story of how something terrible happened in the race and how they overcame it.
I mean, are you in your head at that point, or is it just autopilot?
They're on autopilot. I mean, what we know about high performers when they get in the zone, they're not thinking. And that's a hard thing for most of us to wrap our minds around, is that you could do something at a high level and not think about it. But the fact of the matter is that you're not thinking about it. That's actually what allows you to get into the zone.
Yeah. So you yourself were an athlete. Were you sort of your first client?
Well, I think I was a frustrated athlete. and I think part of what drew me when I went to the University of Georgia in 94 and started the sports psychology program, I think some of my interest in sports psychology was out of some of the things I observed either personally or through other athletes. And I thought, you know, if I can keep this from happening to other people, that would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And you've also worked, so since then, you know, you've been taking on a lot of clients. You've worked with a couple of the women who are going to be competing in golf starting tomorrow, right?
Talk
about that training. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So Stacey Lewis, who's playing for the U.S., who has been the number one player in the world, She's not having her best year this year, but she's still one of the top players. Gabby Lopez, who actually gave up her senior year at the University of Arkansas, she's playing for Mexico. So I worked a lot with the Arkansas teams, and I've worked with her. And one of the things that you notice about these folks, even when they're in college, is you sense that there's something different about them. And part of what the difference is the belief that they have in themselves, what they think about themselves, and what they believe is going to happen to themselves in the future. Those are the core two beliefs that the elite athletes have that's different from the rest of us.
How so? Wait, spell that out.
Okay, so there's two fundamental beliefs you have about yourself, and that is I'm good enough or I'm not good enough. And most people who don't believe that they're good enough, they're not even aware of that. What they say is, I need to get better. But if you flip that over, why do you need to get better? Well, it's because I'm not good enough. So you always perform in the now, in the moment. So the belief that you have about yourself right now is really critical. And so you either believe you're good enough or you're not. And then the belief that you have about the future is simply, it's going to work out for me or it's not. And so if you have a belief that you're good enough and it's going to work out for you, that belief system will really drive you through a lot of difficult times, whereas kids who don't have that belief, they're going to struggle and probably not make it.
What is it about that drives you? Because, you know, on one hand, I think people would hear that and say, oh, well, you got to be cocky. And don't I think, you know, being cocky is pride goes before the fall. You know, what about that belief system is it that drives you through?
Well, in my mind, cocky is not really about having a lot of confidence. Cocky is actually about not having confidence. So people who truly have confidence, there's actually humility to them. In other words, they know they're good, but they know that they're good because of things other than themselves. And so they have a strong belief in themselves, and they believe that they can win, but they don't believe that they're a better person than you.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's one thing to believe that I can run faster than you. It's another thing to believe that I'm a better or worse person than you. So they're able to separate that those two things.
I want to go to a caller, Ann in Manhattan, who has, I believe, a really interesting question. Ann, how you doing?
Hi. My question is regarding an athlete's mental skills. There's a lot of talk now about a brain's plasticity. Is this something, their mental abilities and skills something that you think that can be developed, or you're really born with it, or maybe up until a certain age, yes, it can be developed, but after a certain point, it's kind of too late?
No, and the brain is constantly developing, and you can continue to grow neurons or brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the issue is not so much the physiology of the brain,
mm-hmm.
as it is the software of the brain, which is the belief system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has a core group of beliefs that they hold as true, and those core beliefs drive what you do and don't do. And that really is a difference. Now, you can change belief system.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. It's difficult to do.
Uh-huh.
And the fact of the matter is most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very possible to change the belief system.
But okay. Where does it start, to build on Ann's question? I mean, is this, in your view, is this something, you know, by the time, if I'm going to be an Olympian, it's by the time I'm 2 or 3 years old, I've got what it takes? Where does this happen?
Well, the belief system starts early on, and basically most of the beliefs that your listeners have, they adopted those at an early age. So in other words, someone told you were smart, or someone told you were fast or not fast, and you believe them. The athletes that I work with, one of the things we really focus on, what are those core beliefs and where did they come from? And what most people realize in that process is that they have beliefs that were someone else's belief,
right,
and they just believe that person. But if the person that I'm adopting my belief system, if they're wrong, well, then I'm going to end up in the same place, right?
Yep. I'm going to go to another one. Bob in Rego Park, Queens. Bob, how you doing?
Well, great show. I'd like to ask, when Miss Biles recently missed that jump, it looked like she didn't get up high enough. Do you think it was lack of concentration, muscle fatigue? She took it for granted. When she really looked just like an amateur, like everyone else, on that missed jump, that when she got the third medal instead of the gold.
I don't know if I'd go to amateur, Bob, but she certainly there was something missing from her performance, I think, is what we're saying. What do you think about this?
I want to make sure I understand what's What jump is he referring to, and who was the athlete
again?
That
was on the wooden beam that she tried to do a backward jump, and she almost fell off of it.
So
okay.
And if you don't remember the exact performance, I think inside this is, you know, when an elite athlete who are used to seeing perform just seemingly effortlessly at the top of their game suddenly have just a slight make a slight error, is what's happening there? Is that just, well, you know, people make errors, or is there something grander happening?
Well, I mean, it could be a couple of things. I mean, the fact of the matter is we don't know. But when you have an athlete who's performed at such a high level so consistently, we have that expectation of them, right? I mean, what's interesting about the Olympics is, like for the U.S., I think they had 570-something, you know, athletes. Most of those, we never even see their performance. You know, the only people that they're showing are the folks that are winning medals or competing for medals. So the fact of the matter is what she did, you know, having a stumble on the beam, probably most of the competitors did that. We just didn't see it.
Right. We're just so unaccustomed to seeing her stumble in any way.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it two ways. One is, well, it's terrible that she stumbled. The other thing is that she's so good that she had a major deduction and still, what, came in third?
And still won the bronze, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I want to go to Deborah in Newark, New Jersey.
Yes, I have a question that's framed around my own experience. I'm a scholar who performs at the top of my field consistently over a lifetime. In fact, I've said I perform at Olympian levels. And when I was in my early 20s, a woman 20 years older than I said to me, Deborah, I thought you were the most competitive person I ever met. So I realized you don't compete with anybody. You just compete with yourself. And that's true. I don't compete. I never have with anybody except myself. My question is, do these Olympian athletes compete primarily with themselves because they perform at these Olympian levels? They're the best at what they do instead of with other people.
Well, I think there's a combination of the two. So they absolutely do compete with themselves. In other words, when the athletes that I'm working with, the question I'm asking them all the time is, that are you doing the best that you can right now? And so what we do is we exchange the concept of doing better or doing better to someone else. You have to totally push that out. And so the question you're asking yourself is, am I doing the best that I can right now? That's the key thing, much more so than am I better than someone else.
Oh, yeah. Am I doing the best I can do? That's the only question.
That's all you can do, though. I mean, but you have to... I mean, the great athletes have the ability to be honest with themselves and tell themselves the truth. But that is ultimately the question is this the best that I could do? And if the answer is yes, then you keep going with that. So you may do the best that you can do, and then there may be an opinion that someone's doing it better. But that's usually pretty subjective. And I think when you get into comparing yourself with other people, not only does that harm you in a competitive arena, but it also saps a lot of the joy of life away.
I want to ask you about the swimmer Simone Manuel. I mean, you know, she was the first African American to win an individual swimming medal, and she's talked about the extra pressure that she felt there. And what do you think about that? How does that play into an athlete's mental state as well, and what they have to deal with, sort of when they are breaking boundaries and really making history?
Well, I don't know her personally, and I don't know what, you know, really is going on with her. My guess would be the fact of her being an African-American was probably a very minor thing. I think she was really thinking about that she's in a very competitive field and that I've got to perform at a high level to do well. And again, I think that makes a really good media story, you know, that she's the first African-American. But I don't think she walks around thinking that all the time, you know, that I'm the first African-American or I'm going to be the first African-American.
Well, aside from that specific detail, just the idea that you're making history, you know, whenever you're doing something that is not just competing, but competing at breaking history, does that figure into it?
Well, we're all making history. I mean, everyone is creating history as they go. Now, what is breaking history for you? It might be different than for an Olympic athlete, but I think we should all look at our lives as they're significant and that we can do things that really, you know, have an impact on the world.
We will have to leave it there. Thank you, callers. Thank you, Stan Beecham, Georgia-based psychologist and author of the forthcoming Elite Minds, How Winners Think Differently to Create a Competitive Edge and Maximize Success. I'm Kai Wright. I'm the features editor at The Nation magazine. I've been sitting in for Brian these last couple of days. It's been a joy. Tomorrow, WNYC reporter Sarah Gonzalez takes the host chair. Thank you all for listening.